Well, hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. This is, of course, the very special Monday Pickups Edition. It's a Thanksgiving week Pickups Edition. I am merely Andy Behrens, your usual host here, and I am joined by multi-sport fantasy legend Scott Pianowski. Scott, you and I are old enough to remember a time when the NFL actually had a few teams that were verifiably, objectively, undeniably good. But that is apparently not this era.
Yeah. What do we look for in fantasy, right? We look for consistency. We look for things that are projectable. And while every week is going to have some variance and every week is going to have some good players who go bad, I felt like there's an extra amount of variance in week 11. And I see people like beating themselves up for like playing Dan Arnold. I mean, the guy had three good games in a row. Look at all the name brand quarterbacks who let us down. You know, that Kansas City Dallas game, which I think we all thought was going to be pinball. I mean, that game went on tilt.
Yeah.
Dallas couldn't do anything. There were reasons for that. Patrick Mahomes had a very small game. We didn't get a full game of Justin Fields. We didn't get any Lamar Jackson. We didn't get any Kyler Murray. So it's just, if you survived in week 11, if you avoided the Jonathan Taylor, you know, flash dance, you know, he basically beat you on his own. I did not play Jonathan Taylor in DFS. I might as well just not even check my DFS scores this week because I had a lot of guys who missed. But, you know, when we think of star quarterbacks, when you have a vanity quarterback, you generally think that he's going to score a good number for you more often than not. And I feel like, and if football's tied to so many different things, right? I mean, you get to have the right play call and you get to have a good offensive line. You know, the quarterback has to throw the ball, the receiver has to catch it. All these things have to go right. They're all interrelated. And I feel like there just hasn't been as much offensive consistency this year as maybe in past years. And that's why the sledding lately has been a little bit more rough and bumpy than usual.
Yeah, you're so right. You tend to think of the elite upper tier quarterbacks as guys who are just, you know, the floor is what, 18, 19, 20 fantasy points, something like that. You're not going to get an absolute faceplant from them. But you look, I mean, shoot, Justin Herbert had a fantastic game, but even that guy has either been one touchdown or like three or four touchdowns, right? And there's very little in between. It's just been an incredible sort of roller coaster of a year. Can't get used to it. Can't really identify a powerhouse in the league. And it's been a while since we've been able to say something like that. We are, of course, going to dive into pickups in this show because that is what we do. Spoiler alert, this is not my favorite week for pickups, by the way. But first, I want to give you a little special announcement. We have a special bit of DFS news for Thanksgiving week. Yahoo will be hosting a special $1 million. That's a lot of money. $1 million. Everyone wins Thanksgiving DFS contest. Everyone who joins this contest, everyone is guaranteed to win a cash prize. No losers, only winners. So don't miss your chance at getting a share of the $1 million cash prize. Visit the Yahoo Daily Fantasy Lobby right now and join the $1 million Everyone Wins Thanksgiving contest.
I want to make it clear that Andy is not eligible for that. Neither am I. Although for Andy, I think it would actually be a pay cut.
It's a modest pay cut. Yeah.
Yeah. You're still living off that sex drive money. So
I'm living off of that. And I'm living off the Shohei Ohtani MVP money right now.
Oh, dude, yeah. I saw you doing callbacks to all your baseball winning props.
Hell yeah.
Way to go for that. Also, I think Frank Schwab and I were giving out Ohtani last year. And by the way, there won't be a gambling show. We have an abbreviated podcast schedule this week. Some of the pods made the cut. The gambling pod has not. But if you want picks from Frank and I, first of all, Frank's on like 17 pods a week per his contract.
You're not even trying. If you're missing Frank Schwab on podcasts in any given week, you're just not even trying because yeah, Frank's on all of them.
He's ubiquitous. He's basically the Shohei Ohtani of Yahoo Sports. Let's face it. You know, he pitches, he hits. You know, he's not allowed.
He's
to
the Cordarrelle Patterson. Yeah.
No days off.
Everywhere.
Well, I'll tell you, Andy Behrens, let me duck in a little bit of gambling here. I keep trying to get this MVP market timed right. I thought Dak Prescott was coming into a good spot, made Dallas a pick, said I thought Dak would have a watershed game. That you know, spoiler, no watershed game for Dak. That was a really ugly game. I don't know if I have the stomach to rewatch it. Josh Allen has been kind of exposed as, I don't know, one thing we did get right is that we thought Josh Allen was crazy to be the MVP favorite. So what we're falling into now is the players who are having outstanding seasons are at positions that generally don't win MVPs. Jonathan Taylor's having a wonderful season. He's taking the baton from where Derrick Henry was. Cooper Kupp on bye this week, probably still had 127 yards because he's Cooper Kupp. He's having a wonderful season. These are typically guys that the voting populace will give the Offensive Player of the Year award to, because the NFL is just designed that the quarterback is so gigantically important that they usually win MVPs. Do you think Taylor, Kupp, guys like that have a chance, or you think it'll just fall back to whatever quarterback plays well over the next 6 or 7 weeks? Did you see any logical play in the MVP market right now? Because I'll tell you, I don't know. I'm trying to get this right, and I feel like I'm just giving out a lot of bad advice. So let's try to give out some good advice.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I still tend to think of it as, you know, right or wrong. Obviously, you're correct in saying that it's basically a quarterback's award, as it probably should be in the NFL, right? Like, no other position has quite the same path to value that quarterback does. I get it with Jonathan Taylor. As he was going off, people were beginning to put forth the notion that maybe he could be the rare Peterson, right? Adrian Peterson, the last non-quarterback MVP, that he could perhaps do that. You know, like Cooper Kupp is I think still tracking to at least challenge the single season receiving yardage record. So there's obviously some notable seasons going on. I mean, Taylor leads the league in everything that a running back can lead the league in, right? It's wild. It's rushing yards, it's rushing touchdowns, it's total touchdowns, it's scrimmage yards. He's been fantastic, obviously. And he's got this phenomenal streak of what, 7 or 8 games with over 100 total yards. It also becomes an award that is about narrative, though, and like what is the story that we can tell about your season? And that was pretty easy to do with Aaron Rodgers last year. Not that that's, you know, maybe you can think of that as a tiebreaker. Maybe you can think of it as, like, to me last year, that was what was always separating Aaron Rodgers from like Patrick Mahomes when it appeared that they were basically having the same season in terms of value. I still think that the guys that we can spin a nice story for, and listen, I think the MVP is so undecided right now that it gets, you know, we might as well consider it almost a clean slate. And as if the next, you know, 6 weeks are actually going to determine this award, 6, 7 weeks are going to determine this award. I think the guys that you can really paint a compelling story for are still Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott, right? Like Dak coming off the injury. And of course, there's a, you know, there's a comeback player of the year award that he could also be receiving. But that to me is going to play into it. Like if Dallas finishes this season with, you know, let's say they're one of the teams that gets a bye in the NFC, something like that, that to me would be really compelling. And he's obviously going to have an incredible statistical story to tell. And then Lamar's season, given where it started, given the loss of not only their top running back, but then their second running back and all the things that will have been put on Lamar's plate and the kind of crazy split that he's going to end up with in terms of passing yards and rushing yards, the obvious improvements that he's made, both in terms of volume and ability as a passer. You know, we're gonna forget the fact that he missed this game, right? We're gonna get to the end of the season. We're gonna look at this huge number of fourth quarter comebacks and game winning drives that he's responsible for, and we're gonna be able to tell ourselves a story about Lamar being as uniquely valuable to his team as anybody. So I think that's in play for him as well. But more than anything, I just think it's totally up in the air right now.
Yeah, definitely. And the reason I'm mentioning is, you know, we know over at our friends at BetMGM, you can wager on this stuff and it's fun to track the market, but it's going to be decided in the final third of the season. And you're so right about, you have to have a narrative and you have to have team success. I mean, we just saw in baseball, Bryce Harper and Shohei Ohtani won MVP awards. The Angels were nowhere close to the playoffs and the Phillies didn't make the playoffs either. That doesn't matter in baseball. You could still win the MVP. And baseball is such a pure sport for analysis because it's such a game of individual acts. Football is a game of interrelated acts. And you need so many things need to go right for a play to be successful. And, you know, it's hard to differentiate sometimes who is really the star here. Is it the play caller? Is it the head coach? Is it the quarterback? Is it the left guard? You know, left tackle, whatever it is. So it's so difficult to say. You know, there are people who will still say, oh, Joe Montana and Steve Young weren't that great. They had Jerry Rice. They had Bill Walsh. You know, you can credit anybody you want and discredit anybody you want. I think Jackson and Prescott are two reasonable guys to mention. I'm also curious to see if Tom Brady can, say, maybe lead the league in touchdown passes at his age. He's going to have a shot. And the thing with Baltimore, the thing with Dallas, the thing with Tampa Bay, is that they all have a path to being like the number one and the number two seeds in their conferences. You got to make the playoffs to win the MVP. And that could hurt Taylor. Maybe the Colts don't make the playoffs. maybe they go 9-8. The NFL doesn't have history of saying, oh, okay, you're a 500 or slightly above 500 team. You have an MVP candidate. That's generally not how the voting populace takes place. So we have to keep in mindful of that. So there's a fun sidebar. I know you're here for pickups. I don't think you can pick up Lamar Jackson. I don't think you can pick up Jonathan Taylor, even though Brady hasn't played till Monday. I think he's still rostered 100% of leagues. So maybe we could sneak out some pickups. And segue, former MVP Cam Newton, I'll admit, I came in low. I put him on my fade list. I did win a yardage prop where he went under, which by the narrowest of margins. If Carolina had gotten one more first down late in that game, Cam would have beaten that prop. And you know, Andy, I'm thinking, I know Newton has edged over 50%. So he's, you know, a lot of you who are listening can't pick up Cam Newton. But when I looked at the wreckage of the quarterback leaderboard this week and saw all, you know, saw all the Trevor Siemians and Joe Flaccos and Tyrod Taylors right. who were on it. And all the players I needed, like Dak and Mahomes and Russell Wilson, who weren't on it. I know this is not a new theory. I know I've been saying for years that, you know, the way we score quarterback points, it's just algebra. We want running quarterbacks. Rich Rebar has been dining out on the Konami code branding for years. We love Rich, great fantasy analyst. And we've had him on this program before. I'm at the point now where if we were redrafting now, and look, I said all these nice things about Brady 2 seconds ago. I think I would have to have a quarterback who had some running element, because I look at the game Jalen Hurts had. I'm not sure he played particularly well. He ran in 3 touchdowns. He had 16 non-kneel down rush attempts. Tyrod Taylor did not play particularly well. He ran in a couple of touchdowns, top 12 quarterback. Justin Herbert is a good throw of the football, but one of his best games in a while, he'd been kind of a mini slump, was sparked by 90 rushing yards. I'm at the point now. You can't draft these pocket quarterbacks anymore. I mean, maybe the market will overreact to it. Maybe there'll be screaming values next year. But I'm at the point now where it's mandatory. My quarterback has to have some rushing element to his game, because I need consistency at that position. And that backboard, that tailwind, is how you get consistency there.
Yeah. So I've just actually brought up. There's so much there that we need to talk about, and I had intended to talk about Cam Newton separate from the rest of the quarterbacks that we're going to bring up as potential adds, because as you mentioned, he's just a little bit. It's just like a tick over what we normally set as the threshold for rostership, where we're willing to talk about him in this program. But I just brought up Justin Herbert's game log, and what I had mentioned it earlier in the show, what a wild ride, right? Like, there's all these weeks that aren't actually particularly helpful. 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks with only a single touchdown pass. You know, a couple of other weeks with 2 touchdown passes, and then everything else is just like he goes supernova, right? So, but the guys who have that steady, and not that. You know, not that there hasn't been any rushing element to Justin Herbert's game, but long term, it's not going to be a big part of his game necessarily. He's obviously coming off a somewhat surprising 90-yard rushing effort, but that is not something that is there week to week. It's these guys who are just giving you week in and week out 55 rushing yards. You know, they don't even have to be. They don't have to be Lamar necessarily. But you mentioned Jalen Hurts. You know, it's these guys who can consistently produce 40 rushing yards, good shot at a rushing score, and there's so many of them now that it's hard to avoid them. There's even a handful out there available on waivers. Let's focus on Cam though for a minute, because Cam is like, again, he's right at that line where he might be available to you. And we've got Mahomes on bye this week. We've got Kyler Murray on bye this week. We assume that he's going to come back healthy off the bye, and we've got bye weeks continuing through week 14, like bumping right up against the playoffs. We've got bye weeks continuing. So the bye weeks are going to keep coming. Cam right now rostered in 51% of Yahoo leagues. You mentioned it. He didn't quite hit 200 passing yards, but as a proof of concept game, it was pretty phenomenal, right? Couple of passing scores, one of which was just a beautiful ball to Christian McCaffrey. That score was just really, really well thrown. Really nice touch on the ball. And then he had a long rushing score as well. So he's still got the, you know, he's still got the instinct to run the ball. Still a very aggressive and willing runner, and entirely capable too, right? I think he had 10 rush attempts in that game, 40 plus yards, touchdown. And then the 2 passings, like he just looks perfectly at home. I mean, you can see even in difficult matchups, and I know he's got some coming up, you can see a path to him still finishing as a top 10, top 12 fantasy quarterback just on the basis of the rushing yards alone.
Yeah, he's going to be in my top 10 probably for the rest of the season. There's some nice advantages here. For one thing, okay, it's Thanksgiving week. everybody in the NFL is beaten up right now. Nobody's healthy. Well, Cam Newton is relatively unscathed because he didn't play.
Yeah, the fresh legs, yeah.
Right? He didn't play for the first couple of months, and then he just got a handful of snaps last week. So he's running proactively. He always can have 30 to 50 yards rushing is probably his baseline projection, and he can go for more than that in some games. He's got goal line equity. And you know what else is going to happen sometimes? Is he's going to flip a short pass to Christian McCaffrey or DJ Moore, and they're going to house it. He's playing with very good skill talent. We're even seeing just this, the whiff of Robbie Anderson having relevance again after he was basically mothballed by the Sam Darnold experience, and nobody is going to miss Sam Darnold in the last 2 months. I don't know that I have Newton rostered anywhere, and I'm sure he's probably gone in all of my leagues. So I'll have to get my Cam experience from DFS or maybe some props and everything. And again, I did bet his under on passing. I feel very lucky to have won that. He was just one more completion away from getting that. But the thing is with this with Cam is simple. He's going to give you rushing production every week, and he'll do something in the passing game. And even if he doesn't pass the ball particularly well, maybe DJ Moore bails him out. Maybe Christian McCaffrey bails him out. I still like the skill talent here. He's a perfect guy. This is why fantasy football is so fun and maybe maddening too. Cam Newton was completely out of our lives a month ago.
Right.
He wasn't on anybody's radar. And I don't think anybody thought he'd go back to Carolina of all places. That was probably the last place we expected, even though they were having quarterback problems because they'd had a messy breakup not that long ago.
I mean, for like 3 weeks, they weren't having quarterback problems. And we were talking about Sam Darnold constant. Sam Darnold was like rushing for touchdowns. He had 5 rushing scores like in the blink of an eye.
Look, I love PFF, but I'm still trying to figure out how Sam Darnold was PFF's number one quarterback in week 8. I just don't know how that's possible. There's going to be a spreadsheet error somewhere. Those guys are great. You should read like Ian Hartitz, everything he writes. And a bunch of PFF guys are my friends. So I'm not in any way knocking the site. But I do not miss Sam Darnold. I'm excited about Cam Newton. Again, I snuck out a prop fading Newton last week. But I feel like the fade overall was certainly the wrong play. I think this guy's going to be a difference maker the rest of the season. And if you still have a league that will allow you to make trades, I'm like, don't trade for a quarterback. There's just so many of them. I would actually trade for Cam Newton. I would prioritize him. If you're in a league where, for whatever reason, you're an 18 league, people don't need quarterbacks, nobody picked him up, I'd go out and get him. I think Cam Newton, you're going to be glad you roster Cam Newton the rest of the season.
Yeah, so rest of season rank for Cam for you right now is somewhere inside the top 10, top 12?
Yeah, he's 8, 9, 7, something like that. I mean, to me, he's a no-doubt starter unless your other guy is an absolute overlord.
Yeah, he would have been, I think this week, he would have been under 50% rostered. But when the Lamar Jackson news dropped on Sunday morning, Cam was the pivot play for most of us, I feel like, right? Like,
Kyler, too. Kyler's status wasn't cleaned up till Sunday either.
Right. I had added Cam in a couple of leagues as, the two leagues where I was fortunate enough that he was available as a Lamar Jackson fill in. The rest of them, not so good. The rest of them were really ugly.
I'm sure a lot of Russell Wilson managers were hoping that maybe, we're thinking in retrospect, Wilson doesn't look healthy.
Yeah.
Could Geno Smith have really been much worse in the last 2 weeks than Wilson trying to rush back? And I get it. They have a losing record. They're trying to get back in the playoff hunt. I suspect that's going to be the big, we saw Brady and the Patriots had their divorce. Cam and the Panthers a couple of years ago had their divorce. I think we're headed to the Russell Wilson Seattle Seahawks divorce.
Yeah, we had a little fire drill with it last offseason, and we're probably going to get the real thing this offseason. I would agree with you there. Let's get into some of the other ads at quarterback, some of the more widely available players. And listen, I'm just going to say it again. I'll probably say it 2 or 3 more times. This is one of my least favorite weeks for pickups that I've seen. In the entire time that I've been writing a pickups column, this is about as rough as it gets. And if you just want to go into this waiver period and sort of keep your powder dry and not spend any resources on this crew, I get it. But again, there are people who are facing buys. There are people who are facing injuries, and we're trying to help everybody here. The injuries at the quarterback position, we've mentioned Lamar Jackson came into Sunday with an illness. That is probably going to be resolved this week, and I'm sure he'll be good to go going forward. Justin Fields suffered a rib injury. Doesn't sound as if it's a worst-case scenario. Sounds like maybe he avoided fractures there, so that's good. The ads that I mentioned outside of Cam, you've already hit on some of these names. Wrote a little bit about Taylor Heinicke, wrote a little bit about Tyrod Taylor. Again, he had the 2 rushing touchdowns. We know that Heinicke has a little bit of a rushing element to his game. He's coming off a 3-touchdown performance in that little revenge game for him against Carolina. He's got a matchup coming up with Seattle on Monday night. Tua Tagovailoa still qualifies for this. He's got Carolina coming up. Jimmy Garoppolo, it's like the upcoming matchup is perhaps the most difficult one that he has left. It's with Minnesota. Aaron Rodgers just lit up Minnesota, so how tough is this really? But Jimmy's got an incredible slate down the stretch, and it now appears, I mean, I'm going to have to take the loss here. Where anybody who thought Trey Lance was going to take over at some point probably has to just take the L and admit that as long as Jimmy Garoppolo stays healthy, he's going to be the guy. He's the one who's going to be able to benefit from that incredible stretch of games going forward. How would you prioritize that group?
Yeah, pour one out for Trey Lance and pour one out for my Taysom Hill. I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And even when Trevor Siemian played poorly for most of that game, it still didn't materialize for Taysom Hill. I don't know if he's healthy or not, or if Sean Payton doesn't want to go down that path, but let's give it up
if we can pause on Trevor Siemian, I didn't write about him because he's the one who got him in that mess. Like, I think this is an interesting discussion. How long do you think they go with him? Because he ends up with a perfectly fine fantasy line, right? And gaudy stats and all that. But it was all a byproduct of the fact that he dug them such a huge hole, and then he was able to put up, you know, some garbage timey stats against a relatively soft late game defense. Like, do we think that they just have to stick with him, or do we think that they? I mean, you can make a pretty easy case for Taysom Hill.
I mean, that's the Jameis Winston 2019 playbook, right? I mean, you know, dig yourself a hole and then try to dig out of it in garbage time, put up a good score. You never really played well. You probably lost the game for your team, but your fantasy manager's like, oh, cool, 24 points. That plays. That, I can use that. You know, garbage time heroes never feel any pain, and garbage time heroes never really die. I'm not picking up any Saints quarterbacks. I don't. Archie Manning, don't want him. Drew Brees, Aaron Brooks, I don't care. Whatever. Bobby Hebert, right? I mean, whatever Saints quarterback you want to throw to me, I'm passing on all of them. I cannot figure out the Sean Payton matrix. I don't trust their receiving group. I do trust Jimmy Garoppolo because he's got Debo Samuel. I know Debo did it in the running game. Man, what a fun player he is. I don't think I have any Debo Samuel, but I can't root against him because he's just such a fun player. But they got Debo doing his thing. They got George Kittle doing his thing, even scoring touchdowns now. Imagine that. Ayuk has been out of the doghouse for a while. And how much does defense matter anyway? I mean, Taylor just carved up the quote-unquote best defense in the NFL, one of the top rushing defenses. That didn't bother Jonathan Taylor at all. Aaron Rodgers with a bad toe, went ham against the Vikings. And of course, the Vikings went ham against Green Bay, and their defense have been playing pretty well. Garoppolo has really good pieces around him. You know, I don't know what to do with Heinicke because when Fitzpatrick went down, I thought, you know, Heinicke, 90% of Fitzpatrick, he gets some of that. You know, I don't just let it rip, you know, YOLO ball, you know, would be the nice way to say it. Can't really say the acronym I want to use, but he's got a little bit of that. He plays every snap like it's his last snap of his life. You know, he'll run with reckless abandon. He'll throw 50-50 balls. And I'm still hoping. I really need Logan Thomas in a few teams. We know tight end is just a wasteland. But if you throw Logan Thomas into this offense, McLaurin has popped the last couple of weeks. I actually told some people to bench Terry McLaurin this week, it hurt my soul to do it. And then McLaurin played great. He's one of my favorite players. I was just concerned about, again, Carolina on paper was a tough matchup. Taylor Heinicke, you know, threw his nose up at that. Yep. So I'm having trouble with Heinicke because I feel like when I was in on Heinicke early in the season, he didn't play well. And when I kind of threw up my hands and said, okay, I don't trust Heinicke to the point that I'm even starting to wonder about, can I play Terry McLaurin on a team that's loaded at receiver? I told a couple of people to bench McLaurin this week. I'm not proud of that. He's one of my favorite players, but so I'm going to let you break the tie on Heinicke because he's gone. You know, there's just been stops and starts of this story. Look, Taylor was all the rushing deodorant. You can't bet on him. He's not enough of an active runner that I want to chase that again. So I don't want you to pick up Tyrod Taylor. He's a pretty easy guy for me to pass on. Two is okay. The player I really like here long-term is Garoppolo. And I think Minnesota, he can actually do fine against. So Garoppolo is my priority. I don't have a problem with Tua. I'm leaning into Heinicke, but I want to see how you feel about him. Don't pick up Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, my issue with Heinicke is I feel like I had one or two of these seasons with Kirk Cousins a handful of years ago. Like I've missed every time I try to take a swing with Heinicke, right? Like every time I think the matchup sets up well and he's in a groove and, you know, you see a throw or two from the prior week's game that really, are fairly eye opening. And you think, maybe there's another level that Taylor Heinicke can reach. He's failed for me in the subsequent week. Again, I do like the matchup, though, against Seattle. It's a Monday nighter. And the other nice thing about Heinicke is he's, while not necessarily some, you know, brilliant running quarterback, he is a guy who it's never a surprise if he gives you 30, 40 rushing yards, something like that. So I don't mind him, but I think I probably have these in the same order that you laid them out. I mean, I think Garoppolo is probably on top of this, and it you know, I would have loved to see what a fully, had they actually developed Trey Lance for this moment and for this stretch of games, I think that could have been really interesting. But what we're going to get is Jimmy Garoppolo, and that's going to be pretty good. Like, he's getting
You're asking the wrong question. What you should have said is, had the Niners had the foresight to take Mac Jones with the number three pick, right? Of the AFC stampeding Patriots, right? I mean, Bill Belichick is just sitting back. I mean, what a ball he had. He went down to Atlanta, shuts out the Falcons. The Falcons, I feel like, could have played for 9 hours in that game and still not scored. And then he just sits back and says, oh, okay, Buffalo's getting picked off. Oh, okay, Tennessee's getting picked off. Okay, Baltimore's in a dogfight with Chicago. Unfortunately, Chicago couldn't finish it, but pretty good week for Patriot fans. And it's funny, the stories that come out. You know, who really wanted Trey Lance, he's so young. He hardly played last year. The Trey Lance story hasn't begun to be authored. I'm not by any means putting a gavel down on whether or not Trey Lance can play. But it's just curious, the stories coming out, that some of the room may have wanted Mac Jones. And Mac Jones has been pretty darn solid in a year where most rookie quarterbacks haven't been. I know part of that's the infrastructure. But then again, look, the Patriots have great coaches. What skill talent are you begging for in the Patriots, right? I mean, what quarterback is saying, man, if I only had Jacoby Myers and Kendrick Bourne on my side, man, you couldn't stop me then. So
yeah, it's always tough for me to actually include Mac Jones in this segment. And I think he's only rostered in 40% of such leagues.
Such a modest ceiling. He doesn't run, and he has almost no passing ceiling. I mean,
His greatest skill is he's not making mistakes, right? Which is incredible for a rookie playing meaningful games. It's really impressive in real life.
He's a game manager, maybe game manager plus, but there's no passing ceiling. He doesn't run that much. So he's, what, every week we're probably ranking him like quarterback 20. You can't win a fantasy championship with some – you need a ceiling or a floor. He really has neither one. He's just, okay,
175. Or a superstar at receiver who can just, do things on his own, right? And he doesn't really have that either.
I know they have a nice backfield. I mean, Stevenson has proven to be a nice player, and Harris is a good player. But if you ranked every receiving room in the NFL, the Patriots, I think, would have a bottom five group. Didn't we rank them last? I don't know if we did that for a joke or not, just trying to hurt me the way you guys are. But They do not have a good receiver room. I'm excited to see what Mac Jones can do one day when he has a Justin Jefferson or a Davante Adams. Right. I'm not saying those actual players, but some version of them. I would love to see what he could do with a top five, top 10 receiver guys he had at Alabama, because he does not have that in New England. So I've neatly derailed this show from somebody I don't want you to pick up just because I wanted to talk about the Patriots. But
you wanted a midseason Patriots victory lap. No, I understand it. I respect it.
Thank you.
But just to put a bow on the quarterbacks, I think Jimmy Garoppolo as like a just forward looking at if you actually needed a guy for rest of season for some reason, you were dissatisfied with whatever you have a quarterback. I think Garoppolo is a perfectly fine ad. All he's got to do is stay healthy. And he's the guy who's throwing the ball to Debo, to Ayuk, to George Kittle. It's a great situation. It's an incredible cast. And again, the schedule that he's going to face in the closing weeks is pretty unreal. So
Andy, we got to stay on brand here. I have to mention this really quickly. You're known as the Andy Dalton whisperer on Yahoo. You've been known to wear Andy Dalton shirts. You've been known to color your hair like Andy Dalton.
I was going to try to get through this whole show without a mention of a bear, but fine.
Hey, what says Thanksgiving more, right? Thanksgiving, great day for family, football, friends. We're probably going to get Andy Dalton against the Detroit Lions, okay? If that game doesn't draw like a 17 rating, nothing will. So what's your – and look, you don't have to do it for seasonal. You can do it in DFS. You know, it's going to be challenge slates. He's going to be one of six starting quarterbacks probably. I'm assuming Fields won't be ready in time. Had the long touchdown pass to Mooney. You got to give us an Andy Dalton statement. I'm demanding it.
He is a gentleman who will – surely rank for me as a top 26 fantasy quarterback this week. I mean, it's just a miserable game, right? Like not only do we get the Lions and Bears not playing particularly well, many of the most interesting players are going to be absent from the game. It's just a dud of a quarterback matchup. At this point, neither team should win. The Lions have a, I think, commanding lead at this point, right, as the only winless team. I think everybody else has at least two wins, right? So they've got a little wiggle room in terms of that number one overall pick. They've been borderline unwatchable. The Bears haven't been, well, often they've been unwatchable, but not always. With Fields, if you're a Bears fan, they're at least fun. They had that game. I mean, they absolutely had that game on Sunday, and then the defense gave it away and the coaching staff gave it away. Anyway, I didn't mean to go down that painful rabbit hole. I think Andy Dalton is probably good for, I don't know, two touchdowns and 180 yards and two picks. Does that sound fair? Does that sound right?
I'm sorry, you said 275 and two for Dalton?
No, I'm going to go 182 and two. How's that sound?
313 and two? I'm just trying to get these numbers right. Okay.
That's just absolutely not happening. There's just no hope for that. But I think Mooney can salvage a little bit of fantasy value. Damn it, Scott, you have me talking about the Bears, and I just absolutely did not want to. Curse you.
Well, you know what? Anything that keeps us from talking about this collection of running backs that we're going to pivot to, man, I hope you have good running back room already, because I don't see the answers in this list, but maybe we'll talk it through and find something.
Yeah, listen, there's a secret list of great running backs that we're going to talk about, but that's for our Platinum subscribers only. Sorry, the rest of you are going to have to listen to these names, and they're terrible. And we can go through these so quick. First of all, a couple of injuries that occurred at the running back spot. Michael Carter, when he was really just coming into his own and taking over the rushing workload there, he suffered an ankle injury, hobbled off. That didn't seem great. It's an ankle. Hopefully it's not going to cost him too much time. Jordan Howard, just as he was running a little bit better than Miles Sanders, and Miles Sanders couldn't hold on to the football, Jordan Howard suffered a knee injury, forced from the game. That was upsetting to see. There are no great answers at running back on the wire this week. I got nothing for you. Obviously in New York, it's going to be some combination of Ty Johnson and Tevin Coleman. Tevin Coleman at this stage of his career, at least in my opinion, just sort of an early down guy who throws himself into the line and sees if he can get 2 or 3 yards. And Ty Johnson is somebody that they like in hurry up situations. He's found the end zone a couple times. He's kind of lively. He's kind of fun, but I don't think either of those guys is going to fall into the role that Carter had. And neither of them in all likelihood have Carter's talent or his elusiveness. So I'm not super interested there. Rex frickin' Burkhead took 18 carries and did almost nothing with them, but he does have the Jets coming up. Maybe that's of interest to you. I hate having to wade into the Titans backfield again, the Derrick Henry-less Titans, but it is worth noting that Dontrell Hilliard, it's almost a complicated discussion, because I really think that Dontrell Hilliard, who had just been elevated from the practice squad, all he did was exactly what Jeremy McNichols would have done, but McNichols missed the game with a concussion. So it is entirely possible that your takeaway from Hilliard having 8 catches and, you know, 80 some total yards, that your takeaway from that should just be, oh, that would have been Jeremy McNichols, and I should go ahead and add McNichols if I really need something like that. But he's got New England coming up, not a great matchup, obviously a good defense. The only other name that I mentioned in the column was Latavius Murray, because he's back and he's seeing double digit touches for the Ravens, and that probably means something. But I think Freeman is pretty clearly the guy at the top of that backfield hierarchy, as he presumably should be. He's looked good for much of the season. He's caught passes. So I'm not like, there are no names here that I'm particularly interested in. And if ever there was a week where you should, you know, if you want to add a running back, just go out and get the understudy to your primary back. Maybe that's what you ought to do. I'd prefer to just take a flyer on Alexander Mattison than any of these guys, right? Like, just give me Samaje Perine over any of these guys. Not that those players are going to do anything in this week, but if something were to happen to the backs ahead of them, I would be more interested in those names than any of these. I don't know. Look, but you go into the smoldering ruins of the running back position this week and tell me if you like anything.
I mean, you're right. Mattison should be rostered everywhere. And I think P. Ryan's, mm-hmm. I don't know his tag off the top of my head, but I would think he should be 70, 80, 90%. And I know that he probably isn't. So, and this is handcuff season anyway, or your understudy season, you know, insurance season. I don't like to do that. I don't like to play that card in August or September, but now when you're winning scenario is a lot more specific. This is when the Dalvin Cook manager needs to make sure that he has Madison on his team, stuff like that. You know, Mixon, yeah, who's been really good. That guy really wants P. Ryan on his roster. I like Ty Johnson a little bit more than you. He was actually sneaking in these double-digit fantasy games even when Carter was on his nice little run. And look, as bad as the Jets are, their offense actually isn't the major problem. The problem is they can't stop anything. But they've moved the ball. They've put up fantasy production. You know, they have a receiver that we're excited about that I'm sure we'll talk about depending on his rostership tag. But I have no problem playing Ty Johnson this week. I don't think much of Tevin Coleman either, as you don't. I actually could really use Michael Carter, and I'm going to miss him if he can't play this week, which with that ankle injury, it sounds like he probably wouldn't. So Johnson is somebody I could be proactive on. If I'm looking to make a sneaky ad, and this could turn to nothing, I was somebody who was telling people a week ago that Travis Homer could maybe have an 80-yard game. I think he had like a 5-yard game, so only 75 yards short. I'm starting to wonder. I have no guarantee this is going to turn to anything, but you know, you and I are in some deep leagues. We're in a 20-team league with that Charles Johnson league, for crying out loud. Matt Breida is starting to flash in Buffalo. For two straight games, he's been their most interesting running back. Now, normally I would laugh that off. You know, Buffalo, you know, they're steamrolling towards the number one seed in the AFC. Why do they need Matt Breida? Well, when teams start losing games, that's when, you know, the playing time and the backfield rotation, that stuff starts changing. And maybe somebody in the Buffalo room is like, hey, Matt Breida's playing better than our other two guys. What do we owe to Devin Singletary and Zach Moss? Maybe Matt Breida needs to get 7 to 10 touches, 8 to 12 touches. And in today's backfield of platoons, you know, if you can get to 8 or 10 touches in a game, that has value. So in a deeper league, Matt Breida might be somebody I put a zero bid on, or, you know, in the second wave of pickups I might look at. Not a proactive guy. The only running back you mentioned that I'm going to go after proactively is Ty Johnson, because I just think he's going to step into a very projectable volume role. He's a third down back. He has some goal line equity. And as much as I don't like the Jets for a lot of reasons, I actually think their offense is okay. It's not great by any means, but I mean, it's not Houston's offense, which I can't stand. There's some teams out there, the Lions, it's just really hard to trust other than like two guys. I think the Jets are going to put up 17 or 20 points. And I think Ty Johnson's going to have like anywhere from 10 to 13 fantasy points. And at running back, that's actually a pretty good get.
Yeah, to your point on Breida, 2 weeks ago, it was 6 touches for 50 yards. This past week, it was another 6 touches, 67 yards. Obviously, he's finding the end zone occasionally. Good player, obviously, was a terrific player as part of a committee for San Francisco for a handful of years. When healthy, he was always a highlight machine there, right? This just to me now feels like, you know, it was a 2-man committee that wasn't particularly interesting to us. It's now a 3-man committee that sure. is just getting a little bit more complicated. You're right. In a really deep league, maybe there's a possibility that Breida spikes from being a guy who plays like a dozen snaps a game to all of a sudden, you know, if he's out there for 30 snaps and he's has a path to double digit touches, that could get interesting if the Bills can fix some other stuff, right? Like if they can get back to being that offense. That
their offensive line has been so bad. I mean, it got dominated against the Jags. It got dominated against the Colts. And, you know, so often, look, Breida's got no floor. I want to make that very clear. And I don't even know how, even if you picked him up, how you could play him this week. But what it so often comes down to with backfields, let's just say that Breida's carved out enough of a role that now this messy backfield has become a 3 running back group. If you can eliminate one player, if one of the other guys gets into fumble jail, or if there's an injury with one of the other two players, and now we're looking at 2 running backs and one of them's Breida, then you have something you can work with.
Right.
That's the whole key to so many of these backfields. Can we reduce a 3-person backfield down to a 2-person backfield? Then these players, they have projectable roles, and then you can go after them. But so, I want to make it clear. I mean, Breida is just somebody who I would stash as a lottery ticket in a medium or a deeper league. I mean, he's not somebody I can play, assuming there isn't an injury I don't know about. But I would like to push a little harder on Ty Johnson than you did. Not that I want to stake my entire fab fortunes on him, but I think Ty Johnson, he's going to be, Andy, we're going to rank him. What, running back 18, running back 21? I mean, he's going to be in that neighborhood for me.
Running back 18, huh? I don't know if I'm going to be able to get there on Ty Johnson.
Still buys. A lot of guys hurt, man. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's true. I don't know that I see Ty Johnson as a guy who's going to... Is he going to get 60% of the touches? Is he going to get 70% of the touches? I have no idea their intentions with Tevin Coleman, except that they seem to like him well enough as an early down guy.
Well, this also speaks to I'm spending far too much time with Michael Salfino, that I'm overrating a New York Jet. I love Mike. I hope you listen to the Breakfast Table, where him, he and I have weekly arguments about just about everything, rock music and movies and occasionally New York Jet football players.
Salfino's really fun. There's nobody else like him. Nobody else like him in our industry.
One of one. Absolutely.
One of one.
Unicorn. He's a, you know, you thought Kyle Pitts was a unicorn. Michael Salfino is a unicorn.
Let's get the stink of this week's running backs off of us. And
please,
before we even move on to the receivers, I want to ask you about a player that you mentioned earlier in the show, and that's Jalen Hurts. Is Jalen Hurts, I'm not going to make an argument for him as necessarily the fantasy MVP, because I think that's pretty clearly, if we're voting right now, that's probably Jonathan Taylor. That's probably Cooper Kupp. Those are the two guys that are presumably at the top of the MVPs list. If you go to the research tab in your Yahoo Fantasy League,
Debo can't be far behind, although he's probably,
and Debo can't be far behind. But relative to where we drafted him, Jalen Hurts, is there an MVP case there?
I'm going to go back to my default Jalen Hurts kind of statement, which is he is the player who symbolizes the gap between real and fantasy value more than anybody else. I don't know that the Eagles are sure where they're going with Hurts and what his future is. If they have a bunch of draft capital, it's not believed to be a great quarterback draft, although I've heard in recent weeks that there still may be a handful of quarterbacks drafted in the first round. That's just kind of the way football is. I don't think the Eagles know what they have with Hurts, but Devonta Smith's always open. Dallas Goedert's a good tight end. And this guy runs. This guy has a projectable floor every week, and a position where surprisingly floors have been hard to come by. There's been a lot of star quarterbacks who have been letting us down lately. Jalen Hurts, bottom line, let's simplify this. He's been an easy win. He's been easy ADP beater wherever you got him. Anybody who drafted him, if you stayed the course, yeah, he had a couple of hiccup games. And I know Nick Sirianni isn't the easiest coach to believe in, but he's been a fantasy winner. I'm sure that when I look at that MVP tab, which is fascinating, right? It's not a perfect explanation. I mean, there's one year that Josh Gordon was on it only because smart managers picked up Josh Gordon. He did nothing to help you that year, but he was a move that smart managers would make. Jalen Hurts right now goes down as one of the two or three quarterbacks who was the right answer. He's been a fantasy hit for sure.
Yeah, probably somebody that you took, and you know, this is my way of taking a victory lap on a player, right? I have a fair amount of Jalen Hurts, and the nice thing is you took him in like round 9, you took him in round 10. He was a relative value, even in his, you know, he's had a handful of weeks in which he's missed. Even in those weeks, you know, when he passes for 103 yards, he rushes for 71. So there's something there. It's not a zero. It's not like having the pocket passer who goes for 125 yards and one touchdown and can't help you, right? Like with Hurts, I'm looking back at these are his five most recent weeks in terms of rushing yardage. 69 rushing yards this last week, then 55, then 62, then 71, then 61. He is on pace right now for like a dozen rushing touchdowns and 950 rushing yards. And then you add to that the 3,500 passing yards he's going to finish with and close to 20 passing touchdowns. It's just been a fun season. And like, as you mentioned, I'm not sure that he's the long-term answer for the Eagles. I don't know that he's established himself as, in fact, I'm fairly sure that he hasn't established himself as like a top 15 or 16 passer necessarily. Through that ugly pick in the Denver game, like there's always a throw or two that you can point to every game where you're like, oh man, how could he miss that? Or he sailed a throw. So there are definitely some rough moments as a passer, but just a brilliant runner, easy guy to root for. And then you look at, you know, they're one of these teams that has the late bye, like the super late bye, a week 14 bye. And that's going to be a week that you need to win in a lot of leagues. So that's a little bit of a pain. But if you get through that, his schedule in the actual fantasy playoffs in weeks 15 through 17, you couldn't lay it out much better. He gets Washington twice and he gets the Giants. Washington, of course, has been one of those defenses that we've just picked on all year. They're the defense that Cam just went off against. So it's just an incredible closing stretch for him. It's been a phenomenal season so far. And I think a case can be made based on just purely on ADP, just purely on where you took him and what you were able to take earlier in the draft because you waited so long and then still got Jalen Hurts. You know, I think he's just one of those sort of, we toss around the term league winner all the time, and not everybody can be a league winner, but I think he has a chance to finish the season as one of those guys that is a legit league winner for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the way I'd like to phrase is he might go down as the best, the most right answer at the quarterback position based on production, yeah. based on what he cost. And look, everybody, listen to Andy Behrens. I mean, he was in on the Lamar Jackson MVP breakout. I believe Josh Allen was one of your guys last year who, it seems like a long time ago, but Josh Allen took a major step up last season. This year, he gave you Jalen Hurts. So next year, when Andy is telling you that, I don't know, Justin Fields is going to make a leap, or Mac Jones is going to be an MVP candidate, or, you know, he'll probably, you have to ignore his Trey Lance advice, which has proven to be historically wrong. But Andy Behrens has been giving you a lot of right answers at quarterback. And right now, Jalen Hurts goes down as the number one right answer at quarterback, as far as where you got him ADP-wise in the summer.
Didn't mean for that to come back around on me, but I'll take it. Let's jump into the wide receivers now, because we have to continue helping the people. And there were some pretty legit injuries at this spot. This is probably the roughest spot in terms of injuries this week. And this one really hurts me. CeeDee Lamb suffered a concussion relatively early in that Dallas KC game, banged his head on the turf. In the end zone, ugly play, immediately ruled out of that thing. And then they come back on Thursday, right? So there's very little chance that CeeDee Lamb can possibly be available for Thanksgiving game. So they're going to be without both Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. So that's obviously, it's a tough sledding for Dak Prescott
Thursday.
As well. Oh,
so many good players won't be playing on Thursday. Right? Really disappointing. Right?
AJ Brown suffered both, I believe, hand and chest injuries. If AJ Brown can ever just give us a game where he just start to finish is in it and he's playing every snap and he doesn't have to check out to get looked at, that would be great. Jarvis Landry still dealing with a knee issue. So a lot of issues at wide receiver. The ads that I wrote about, and I'm not... There's only one guy here that I think I'm really all in on. And so I guess I'll start with him. I think Van Jefferson is somebody who should be well over 50% rostered. He's just collecting targets now, right? And I understand why you may have dropped Van Jefferson, because there was that little like 24-hour period or whatever it was between the signing of Odell Beckham and then the injury to Robert Woods, where it really seemed like, okay, Van Jefferson is probably the odd man out here. They're going to have three receivers on the field much of the time, and one of those guys is probably going to be Odell, and that's bad for Jefferson. But now that is no longer a problem. The guy basically never comes off the field for the Rams. He's playing 90%+ of the snaps. He's seeing 6, 7, 8, 9 targets each week. Like, volume is there. They're Matt Stafford targets. It's a Sean McVay offense. He's going to play all the time. I think Van Jefferson needs to be on rosters. After him, this is kind of a season to taste thing. I have to talk about Marquez Valdez-Scantling because he's coming off, you know, he's been just collecting air yards all year with very little to show for it. And finally, he pops. He has the big reception, goes for a touchdown, 120+ yards, long TD in that one that tied the game before Captain Clutch, Kirk Cousins, brought back the Vikings. That was good to see. That was a fun game. Other guys. I like Elijah Moore is just over 50% rostered, so we can't talk about him. We've talked about him a couple times. Jamison Crowder is still available to you, and he's getting 6 or 7 targets per week. He's got Houston coming up. DeAndre Carter has touchdowns in 3 straight games for the Washington football team. Clicking, obviously, with Heinicke. He's not like a zero in terms of targets either. He's got some, you know, 6, 7 target games out there. So Carter is an interesting player. Someday, Sterling Shepard is going to play again. Perhaps it's next week. He's got Philadelphia coming up. That's been a relatively soft pass defense all year. I'll just throw out the name Tim Patrick again, and you guys can feel free to ignore it. Cedric Wilson strikes me as a guy who might be able to benefit from the absence of both Lamb and Cooper on Thursday. He's got Vegas coming up. Man, did Wilson not have a great day. Couple of key drops against Kansas City. Not that Dallas was necessarily going to do anything anyway, but those were kind of crushing drops. So coming off a rough game, but he's in for, I think, a pretty significant workload. And then I'll just toss in Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who has had some moments this year. Ryan Tannehill really likes him. Just went over 100 yards for Tennessee. And, you know, this Tennessee offense, we never know exactly what we're going to get or who's going to pop. He's got a tough matchup coming up against the Patriots, however.
Yeah, here's my quiz for the reader. There were 10 Tennessee players who were targeted this week, and I want to see, on your own time, see how many you can list. The par score is 6, although maybe the par should be 5. I mean, Ryan Tannehill was throwing to guys. I'm not even sure if he knew who they were, but that's how injury riddled they are. And it's really frustrating to see AJ Brown, you know, kind of having a career that mirrors the end or looks like the end of Julio Jones's career, where he's just constantly hurt and you can't get through a full game because they're such wonderful talents. Julio's already in the Hall of Fame as far as I'm concerned, and AJ Brown has Hall of Fame talent, so that's not fun to see. I can't recommend any. Marcus Johnson burned me last week. They're Akine and Marcus Johnson. I'll give you two of the Tennessee guys. The other eight, you're on your own. Good luck. Again, six is our par score. I believe eight is the score to beat. So good luck with that. DeAndre Carter reminds me so much of Tim Patrick, where there's not a huge upside there, but he's got touchdown equity.
Yeah.
And Washington, the tree's pretty narrow. I don't know when they're going to get Logan Thomas back. We know, of course, that they have an alpha receiver there. But the Carter has a role. Heineke's playing well. It's a good matchup. If you're looking for 40 to 65 yards and maybe a 50-50 chance at a touchdown or 40% chance at a touchdown, I think Carter fits that. The thing with Van Jefferson, I'll sign off on all the positive Van Jefferson things you say. And he's got a pedigree, right? His father, Sean Jefferson, was an NFL receiver. He's been a position coach for a long time. So he's learned at the feet of his respected dad. Jefferson looks better on the stat sheet than he does on the field. A lot of times it seems like he's maybe not running the cleanest route, or he and Stafford don't have the greatest connection, but they just had a bye. The targets are there. It's a bankable offense. Obviously, the Woods injury opens up Jefferson to have a role here. And as you said, with the personnel they play, he's on the field basically 100% of the time. Yeah. So if you can get a player like that on waivers this late in the season, you don't question, don't nitpick him like the way I just did for the last 15 seconds. He's the first guy to get. I'll also sign off on MVS. I would hope that Valdez
10 targets.
Right. Would be tied to the idea would be that you'd have two consistent guys ahead of him, or maybe three consistent guys ahead of him.
Yeah.
And then MVS is your throw caution to the wind. You know, he's an air yards guy, right? It's a lot of times air yards turn into a whole lot of nothing. It turns into a whole lot of 2 for 17. It's like, oh, the air yards. Oh, we just missed. You know, he just had 1 foot out of bounds on a 58-yard catch, or, you know, he got interfered with on what could have been a touchdown, but he's still tied to Aaron Rodgers. There's no obvious number two receiving threat here. We know Adams, of course, you know, lords over this offense. They have a role for a second receiver and a deep threat. I think MVS, as long as he can stay healthy, is going to fill that. So I'm happy to add him. I like Sterling Shepard. He's been hurt so much through his career in this year that's hard for me to rely on him. So I'm not going to go near him. One thing with Cedric Wilson, and I know he didn't play his best game against Kansas City, although the Chiefs defense has been surprisingly pesky the last few weeks. If you're playing that DFS slate on Thursday, Wilson's salary has to be really low. I mean, he'll be a good punt play.
It's a good call.
Yeah. Where you only need 50 or 60 yards for him to pay it off. If he gets a touchdown, you've made a big win. So he could be a fun DFS guy if you don't want to make the seasonal step forward. I still believe in the Dallas infrastructure. I know the offensive line's a little bit dinged up. I believe in Kellen Moore. I believe in Dak Prescott. The last time this team let us down, they absolutely took a team to the woodshed the following week. I think Dallas will be back in the 27-30 point range on Thanksgiving, and I have a feeling Cedric Wilson will get a piece of that.
If they get back to the 27-30 point range, it's going to be hard for, like, those numbers can't all go to running backs, presumably. I think that I agree. We're in almost perfect lockstep here. I really think that MVS and Van Jefferson are the two guys that, if I'm actually looking at, you know, beyond this week, beyond immediate needs for week 12, if I'm looking rest of season, they're probably the only two guys that I'm seriously interested in rostering for multiple weeks. Let's hit the tight ends real quick. A couple of familiar names here. The one name, and again, I always have to throw out this caveat, we're recording this on a Monday afternoon. Don't yet know what happened on Monday night, but I think there's never a right time to add Evan Engram, but if there's a less bad time, it would probably be going into a matchup against Philadelphia. Maybe we could have a discussion about this, because I feel like people have different opinions about whether it's even relevant to talk about defensive performance against certain positions, against the tight end position. Man, Philadelphia has been bad against tight ends this year. And it's not a one-year thing for that team. And I do tend to feel like at the extremes, you know, the teams that are particularly generous to tight ends and particularly stingy against tight ends, I do tend to think that it matters, because it reflects something about scheme. It reflects something about personnel, the decisions that they make with regard to coverage. I do tend to think it matters. Like, Troutman just went off against the Eagles, as we knew he would. Tight ends have been doing it absolutely all year against the Eagles defense. They have given up the most receptions, the most receiving yards, the most receiving touchdowns to opposing tight ends, and they are about to get Evan Ingram. Do with that information what you will. Beyond that, I mentioned Tyler Conklin in the column. I still mentioned Dan Arnold, even though he just got shut out last week, because as you'd said earlier, you know, Dan Arnold in like four of his previous five games had given us 60 plus receiving yards. And that, like, that kind of makes you a made man at the tight end spot.
Yeah. We've talked so much about Conklin and Arnold in previous episodes. People know what they're getting there. Conklin gets the scraps. Minnesota's got probably the narrowest tree in the NFL, right? It's all Cook. It's all Jefferson. It's all Thielen, and whatever scraps are left go to Conklin, but he's got 30 to 50 yard projectability, maybe a touchdown. Lauren Carpenter gave him out on FF Live a couple weeks ago, and he had a 2-touchdown game, so that was a nice hit. I have no problem. If you're not enriched with a great tight end, I can still go to battle with Conklin and Arnold. I mean, Arnold was variance. I think Troy King, another friend of ours who's on FF Live, was apologizing for his Dan Arnold take and say, hey, the guy was really good 3 weeks in a row. I mean, everybody has a game where for whatever reason they fall off the face of relevance. I haven't looked at that tape. Maybe San Francisco prioritized him in coverage. I don't know if that happened, but I mean, it's a variance game. That's the way NFL is. I'm fine with those two guys. You made a great point here, and I'm just going to underscore it. Yes, the Eagles are giving it up against the tight end. And you talked about outliers, and this is a huge part of how I play fantasy football. Okay. If a defense, especially when you talk about defensive strength, I want to know what defenses excel in a certain area, and I want to know what defenses are horrible in a certain area. The point is not, oh, this team is number 13 against tight ends, this team is number 17, I got to go for the 13. That doesn't matter. The big middle, who cares? It's not significant of anything. It's all noise. The signal is who is horrible at something, who is great at something. And the Eagles give up such a high completion percentage. And what are we talking about here? We're talking about defined throws. We're talking about where the quarterback knows where the ball goes and the guy's wide open. It's a very low stress play for a quarterback. So not only will I sign off on Ingram, and we're flying blind in the Monday game. I also think we didn't mention Daniel Jones. And I know Daniel Jones has had plenty of bricks this year, but he's been playing without his offense, right? I mean, Barkley's been in and out of the lineup and the receiving room. We never know who's going to play. If you can give Daniel Jones 60% of what their best offensive talent is supposed to be, whether it's Tony plays, I don't know if Shepard will play. They've gotten almost nothing out of Kenny Galladay. I mean, it feels like Kenny Galladay never even really joined the team. But I think Daniel Jones could put up a 22. We just saw a bunch of quarterbacks, right? A bunch of sketchy quarterbacks just had good games. And we talked about the importance of running. Daniel Jones is willing to run. He's got 30 to 50 yard rushing upside, you know, maybe a rushing touchdown there. So I'll sign off on Ingram. And I also think maybe we should have given Daniel Jones. And again, look, who knows what he's going to do Monday night. Maybe he'll play so poorly that nobody wants to touch him. But I think he could have some value against Philadelphia as well. But the main takeaway, live on the outliers. That's what matters with this stuff. Don't care about 13s and 15s and 17s. That stuff doesn't matter.
Very well said. Before we get out of here, why don't you give the people one player to drop heading into week 12?
Yeah, I'm going to do the Andy Barron spineless drop, because every good fantasy manager has already dropped Mecole Hardman, 50% rostered. So I guess he still qualifies for the segment. Look, they don't view him as a priority player anymore. And so if you need a player to have a good game before you actually start him again, that means you can probably drop him. You can drop Mecole Hardman.
I am going to give you a guy that we discussed last week. And listen, today's pod, probably full of guys that we'll be dropping a week from now. We gave it a try with Deontay Foreman, and it didn't happen, right? Dontrell Hilliard had a role. Adrian Peterson continues to have a role. Congrats to Foreman on recording, I believe, the first missed tackle that he has recorded this season occurred this past week. But you know, I've felt like he's been a rough watch, right? He's generally tackled by the first guy to make contact with him, but he had, we thought, a really appealing matchup this past week against Houston. He didn't pop. He didn't really surge to the head of a committee or anything like that. So listen, we tried, it's over. I'm kicking him to the curb.
Man, I needed the Tennessee defense to do something. Spoiler, the Tennessee defense did not come through. I've been off my defense game. We've seen a lot of major upsets lately, right? It used to be just so easy. Oh, 10-point favorite, you know, playing one of the weakest teams in the league. I'll get my 17 points on defense. How about zero?
Maybe we should be talking about these drops at the top of the show. I hate to always end on a depressing note like that.
I think
like,
next week we should just do all drops. We should do like we should drop like 27 guys and then maybe pick up two guys. That's what we should do. Totally flip the script.
We'll put all the ads behind a paywall from now on. That's a great idea. I love it.
You're just going premium, man. I'm surprised when I call you. Well, you almost never return my calls, but you're going to be like, okay.
Oh, this is
at the beep. It's going to be $3.95 a minute. P&L.
Yeah, you don't have the secret subscriber hotline. That's the problem. That's the
I
only.
Do not issue have there. Access to the bat phone. I'm working on that. Producer John, maybe you can give it to me, but.
Don't give it away, John. Don't give it away.
I feel like I'm being frozen out. I don't like it.
Don't make me change that number again. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode. But we will, of course, keep the conversation going on Twitter. You can follow me at Andy Behrens. You should definitely follow him. Scott at Scott_Pianowski for fantasy news and analysis. Why wouldn't you want that from the whole team? Please make sure that you're also following at Yahoo Fantasy. Liz and Dalton are going to be there tomorrow. They're going to be back tomorrow with a preview of all of Week 12's games. But until then, we are out.